Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 203 of the podcast with Jeannie So, the children's publishing director at Chronicle Books. What does a children's publishing director do? And are there qualities of the job that a child could connect to? As it turns out, the answer is a resounding yes. Jeannie shares her focus on making books that matter, and the most important piece of any project. Can you guess it? I guess you'll have to listen and find out. Here is episode number 203 of the podcast with Jeannie So. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Jeannie. So I'm so excited to get to talk to you tonight.
I'm excited to get to talk to you too.
I'm excited that Laura connected us. I'm excited that you're from Chronicle. I'm excited that we have fun kid names. This is all good.
Yeah, it's great.
So Jeannie, you have the distinct honor of two things. Of one, being the first children's publishing director I've spoken to, and then also by proxy being the blunt of all of my questions.
Okay, excellent. Love that. I love being the first children's publisher. I love that because I'm very competitive. I love being the first. And then ask me anything.
Well, because the publishing process is such a, especially from someone like me where I'm coming in from the library or as a parent, it amazes me and astounds me sometimes that books even get made because of the many, many, many hands that are on them. But maybe that's actually why they end up being as strong as they are, because so many people are working to make these wonderful works of art come out.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I mean, I think it's a very collaborative process, especially I would say in picture books, where you have a team that is devoted to talking about the book and thinking about the book, and you have the author, you have the illustrator, you have the art director or designer, you know. So there are many hands involved. I would say that's probably less true of novels, but I think that everybody who works on novels too probably has another voice that they talk to a lot, whether it's an assistant or some trusted editor that they consult and say, what do you think of this scene, or what do you think of that? You know, just as writers do.
Yeah.
And I think that collectively it makes for a more complete and satisfying and really beautiful whole.
Well, so as a children's publishing director at Chronicle, what's your, I don't know, your day-to-day or your week-to-week like?
That is a good question. I think it varies from, I go to a lot of meetings, I have to say, but many of them really good meetings, you know. I mean, they have to do with the overall company strategy. Some of them are editorial meetings where I meet with the editors by themselves and we talk about acquisitions, or we brainstorm, we look at projects that are coming in, or we'll have an idea about something, or we'll say, really like this particular writer has approached me about this, but I don't think that that is the right project. But
oh, okay.
What ideas do you have about that? So there's that piece of it. And then we have acquisitions meetings, and we have two kinds of those. We have a bigger acquisitions meeting, which we call our publishing group acquisitions meeting, in which everybody involved with the book, from production to marketing to design to editorial, gets together and looks at projects that we're interested in acquiring and talks about them and decides whether or not we want to pursue them. And then there's a smaller group of higher up people, and those are the ones that we go to for the books that are more expensive, you know, the ones that go to auction.
Yeah. Do you have like a number of books that you can acquire each season, each quarter?
So we don't have, I don't have a hard and fast rule, but
yeah, okay.
I can tell you our general breakdown.
Okay.
We do maybe 100 books a year, new titles. And of that, although I think this past year, I'm not including paperbacks in that, in that number. But of that, and I'm also counting some books that I would think of as series, as maybe one title. So for example, I have a board book series that we're coming out with in 2016 called The Cozy Classics. And there are four of those. And I kind of think of them as one title, but there are four books actually. But anyway, we have, so the breakdown goes, it's 100 titles a year. We do two seasons, so roughly 50 titles a season. So we do fall and we do spring. And then within that, I'd say picture books, anywhere from, like 12 to 20 picture books. On the novel side, we've been ramping that up. So ideally, we'd be looking at 5 middle grade, maybe 5 YA, but we actually haven't hit that number yet. And then on the format side, which is what we term our non-book or book-related projects, so flashcards, stroller cards, journals, those kinds of projects, those we do maybe between around 15 of those a list. And then on the board book side, which we're actually
because we're finding that
our board books are doing really well.
I was gonna say, because you're publishing really good ones. I keep getting good ones. And you threw out, just to add context to people listening, you threw out Cozy Classics. I knew that name, so I had to Google it while we were talking. That's Jack and Holman Wang. That's the Star Wars Epic Yarns people.
Yes, they're the Star Wars Epic Yarns.
Those are gorgeous books.
Yeah, thank you.
So yay, I'm excited that those are the ones you're referring to. That's great. Yeah, I think your board books, I mean, I get, I think Lara just sometimes sends me stuff that seems interesting, because I never always know what to ask for. There's some stuff that looks exciting and some stuff that, as a reviewer, I just kind of feel like I'd rather you just surprise me and let me be open to it. And some of the board books she sent have been, I mean, amazing and perfect that I have a 7-month-old to test them on. But I mean, it's great.
You really are the perfect interviewer for me, because you have kids who hit the core of our list, which is some of the best books that we do, which is definitely board books, which we, as you said, we're doing more of, and that you've noticed we're doing a really good job on. Thank you for that. And picture books, which has always been what we've been known for. And we're expanding that out now, as I said, to fiction for older readers.
Well, it's so fun to be in publishing, or to be aware of publishing, I guess, from a reviewer standpoint for years now, because you start to see trends in publishers. There's a certain quality to Chronicle, and I guess hearing you, it makes me feel like that's probably because there's this team that's deciding over and over, and this company that has this sort of vision or goal of what kind of books you'll produce. And it's just nice to see that there are books that then, that you could say it this way, there are books that feel like Chronicle books.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that we do like to say, and that our publisher, Christine Carswell, likes to say about Chronicle as sort of a guiding principle, is I knew it was a Chronicle book before I even picked it up. And I think that's true. I think that is that a lot of people feel that, even if they don't necessarily articulate it. And it's something that we all hold very dear to ourselves when we are talking about an illustrator or when we're talking about even taking on a project. So that kind of distinct, the word distinctive comes up a lot in our
distinctive,
conversations.
Distinctive,
yeah.
Yeah, it
and,
makes,
and
it,
that's an important word for us.
It makes me think, too, of, well, there's a couple publishers that it does feel that way. Like, I think of even, I guess what I'm trying to say is you feel like a small press, but I know that
mm-hmm.
you're not, but you kind of are. But
mm-hmm.
when I think of Chronicle, I think of like the great stuff coming out of Flying Eye, which is a very small press
mm-hmm.
company, that it just feels like you're after this artistic quality, the distinctive quality that you're saying, that just feels, it feels a little separate from things. And I think that each publisher does it well. I mean, I think Candlewick does a good job
mm-hmm.
in that same breath. Not to pit one against the other. It more feels like,
right.
well, this is the place for this one and this is the place for that, which makes me, I guess, even talking to all of these different authors as I do, it makes me think of, oh, so when agents or if a book goes to auction or something like that, when we're deciding what seems like the right place for it, it might even come down as simple to me, I guess, as what feels right, what feels like the best fit.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it's tough on the agents.
Oh, I'm sure.
they'll say, especially the ones who don't know me personally or who don't necessarily know my editors, will say, well, what are you guys interested in? And my usual response to that is, well, you have to get to know us and you have to look at our list, take a look at our catalog,
oh, okay.
And figure it out. Cause I think something does emerge, you know? And I think that we do have a different identity from a Candlewick,
yeah.
or from an Abrams,
mm-hmm.
or from, you know, they're obviously a very different identity from a Penguin Random House, but they're so huge, I kind of don't even put them in the same.
That feels a little different, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so you've got, my word, so you're in these meetings all the time, figuring out what books are
going to
come out.
I'm in these meetings, yeah, I'm figuring out. And then, you know, I talk to, I'm also here to help my editors with guidance, you know, so they'll come to me and say, I'm thinking of this illustrator. What do you think of that?
Oh, okay.
Or
Jeannie,
this particular approach. Yeah.
Jeannie, sorry to interrupt. I was just going to ask, how does the illustrator thing work? Do you have a set of illustrators that you tend to use? Well, I guess there are some people that you tend to use over and over, and that's amazing. But can you approach anyone? You could approach anyone, right?
Yeah, and we actually like to try to use different illustrators and try to expand the pool of people that we use, partly because, unfortunately, you know, I mean, this is one of the pitfalls of being a smaller independent publisher, is that we are in a position sometimes of discovering really great people when their careers are just beginning to take off. And then they start to get so expensive, but also they get so busy,
yeah.
that it then becomes difficult to get them on later projects. So we're constantly having to look for new talent, and that's actually something that's very exciting to us, you know, because we are smaller and we're set up to understand illustration and to be, I think, a little more aesthetically sophisticated than perhaps other more commercial publishing.
Do you find, well, let me just ask, let me back up. How long have you been in this role as publishing director at Chronicle?
At publishing director at Chronicle, I've been doing it for maybe about 4.5 years.
Nice. So in 4.5 years. So
yeah.
You've gone to the table for you've had your seasons, your two seasons a year. So I'm picturing you've got like 9 seasons under your belt right now, ish.
Mm-hmm.
So in 9 seasons, do you still, and you're picking 50 books at a time out of
right.
hundreds of thousands, do you find you still get excited about titles?
Oh, yeah.
Still, that's great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we live for, really, you know, is what's the thing that gets us all really excited, you know? I was thinking about this because actually, you know, I tend to be kind of cranky when I'm actually reading, you know, because there are so many, well, if you think about it, there's so many books, right? There's so many books in the bookstores. There are so many people who are pitching to you. There's so many people who are sending you things. You think, well, the world does not need another another one. Oh, really? Right. So when you're in that, when I'm in that mindset, you know, it's like, okay, so impress me. So I find that I generally am honestly in a cranky mood when I start reading. And if the author can overcome that, and really, if the author can overcome it so much that I even miss a stop on a train, which has happened from time to time, you know, then I know this is really a great book. Or if the subject is something that by its nature I'm going to resist, like somebody sent me, this was a while back, but an agent sent me a memoir of anorexia. And I said, yeah, I really don't want to read this. I don't want to read this. I feel like there's so much that's out there right now. And then when I started reading it, I couldn't stop. You know, it's experiences like that that are really special and stand out and make me feel like this is why we do what we do, you know.
That's
because,
awesome.
Because we're making things, we are making a difference, and we're making books that matter, and we're making experiences that matter for kids.
Oh yeah. I feel like you're also continuing to deliver on that promise that there's this voice that you're putting out there that's consistent and strong, and you can rely on this voice to continue to put things like that out there. It's not like,
thank you.
Well, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Like you're making safe decisions. Oh, like we shouldn't take a chance on this. That's not at all where I'm trying to go with it, but rather that, yeah. That they're just, it feels like I'm not going to get, well, this goes back to that voice that you have as Chronicle, or again, not that you're the only people doing this way, but it just feels like I'm not going to pick up a book from you and it's just going to be wish-wash or throwaway, that there's going to be something there that, for me at least, one of the things I like most about your picture books in particular is that there's some resonance there that I think about mm-hmm. them a lot. And I really like that I think about them a lot. And that goes for almost everything I've read recently from you, from something getting as much push as Leo, A Ghost Story, to like Rude Cakes by, mm-hmm. by Robot. I just,
right.
I still find myself thinking about it, and that makes me right. really happy. And it's any book like that you just can't stop thinking about that. I really like that quality.
Oh, that's such a nice thing to say. And it's such a nice, it's so nice to hear that you actually see a consistency to the overall program, because I think that is something that I think about in the back of my head is that, does this really fit in the right way for us? Well, that is something that I think about.
Right. Cause it also makes me think too, like, look at these decisions you're making. So you had Press Here by Hervé Tollet, which is mm-hmm. maybe all of the world's favorite picture book.
Right.
Because of the way it says, no, wait, look, a picture book can be interactive. You don't need a device. Look at how beautiful this can be. You can right. affect the story. But what you did not do then is say, okay, let's buy up as many Press Here-ish books as we can, because there's a market for them. Unfortunately, yeah. it feels like everybody else did.
Yeah, we noticed that too.
but you didn't. And I think, again, for me, to see that, the restraint that you're exercising in as a publisher or as a voice, I keep thinking of it as this voice that you're putting out there, the restraint you're exercising makes me respect you more, because you're not chasing after what's selling, but rather you're trying to build a relationship with readers.
Absolutely. Well, I think what we've always tried to do, I mean, that goes back to the distinctive piece of Chronicle, I think.
Yes.
Generally. But I think too, I mean, I think we are very much about not imitating other publishers and not wanting to do what everybody else is doing. I think that all of the editors here are very much aware of the fact that they should be making contributions that matter, and making books that matter, but also making books that are different in a way, you know, I mean, groundbreaking maybe sometimes if we're going to be really ambitious with some of the books that we do, but even if they're not going to be revolutionary the way that Press Here was. And by the way, I should tell you that I had nothing to do with that acquisition. I was lucky enough to come in and be publisher after it had already been acquired. Yeah. Yeah. So that was just a very happy day for me, but I don't want to take credit for something I didn't have anything to do with. But in the case of some of the other books, I think, you know, we want to we want to be ahead of everybody else. You know, we don't mind. Well, sometimes it is annoying to see people imitating us, but we never want to be in a position where people are saying, oh, well, that Chronicle, they just, they're imitating so-and-so. You know, we want to be the ones that everybody else says, how'd they do that? And I think we felt that way about Rowboat, that he was offering something really different and really funny. And, you know, it was one of those moments where the book Brood Cakes just cracked us up and just felt like, yeah, we have to do this. It's something we have to do. Very, in some ways it's not very scientific, but it's pretty intuitive.
I'm just enjoying the way it's just like, well, I mean, this is really just the book we had to publish. We just knew it.
Yeah.
to break it all down that simply, like, well,
yeah, I could give you the
the
business reasons too.
No, I don't want you to ruin it for me. I love this. I love the emotive reasons why you chose it. I love that.
But it is, you know, it's a business of passion, right? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why we all got into it in the first place.
Let me give you the business reason. This will be more fun. Okay, so the reason why Jeannie bought this book is because we were in need of cake books on the market. And there was a need for ogre books on the market and fancy hat books on the market. So to combine them all into one, you were hitting three diverse markets in one.
Exactly.
Therefore, market shares increased.
Oh, and let's not forget about etiquette. Actually,
true.
Serious for a second. I mean, that really is a completely valid handle for that book, I think. That it's a book about manners that kind of sneaks it in, you know.
Oh, yeah, and so brilliantly, too. Robo and I talked about this.
So smart,
But to have it, too, to flip it on its side, that you would never think cakes would be rude, and likewise, you would never think that ogres would be anything but rude.
Yes.
So exactly. it was one of those, just as they always are when they work this well, just deceptively simple, that there's no way it probably went through so much time with Rowboat alone before it even came to a publisher, working on editing it and making it work and you know, working down that idea to make it the strongest it could. And yet now it just feels like, oh, well, this was, anybody can write a picture book. Look how simple this is. But it's brilliant in the way that it's, in its simplicity.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So, it makes me laugh.
I know, right? We did, tons of us did activities based on it, but I had my kindergartners all made like headband hats where they, the headband, like we drew giant eyeballs on like sentence strips, right? You can picture sentence strips, drew giant eyeballs on there. And of course the kids, we stapled them too big. So it just went right over their eyeball and they drew these rude cakes on top. And we just walked around being ogres or cyclopsies with rude cakes on our heads. It was wonderful.
That's so good.
That's, I mean, for me, I guess that's what I'm thinking of too. As a librarian, when I look for books, it is what book speaks to me in a way that I want to do something else with it. Where's that wonder for me that I don't want to just read it, but I want to perform it, or I want to make something from it, or I want to, there's this emotional connection I'm feeling with it that I want to just hold it close because the book understands me in a way that I didn't realize I understood myself.
That is perfect. Yes, perfect. That's right. And that sense of wonder that you talk about is, I think, so essential to every book on the list. Like I think about that. I mean, I don't think I've actually articulated sense of wonder, but I've used different phrases, but that's another really key component, I think, to making a good list. I also think, you know, for me too, I think listening to my editors who all have really different taste is really important. And knowing that I'm not necessarily going to agree with every single person, but I trust them. And if they're really passionate, to me, passion is the most important piece of coming up with a really good program.
Yeah.
And so I learned that really early on when, you know, way, way back in the day, I used to work at Harper and there was an editor that I worked with whom I really liked a lot, but we had really, really different taste. And at one point she wanted to acquire something that I just didn't get. You know, it was this high fantasy thing and I wasn't sure. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to trust her because she really knows her stuff here. And even though I don't really get this, she does. And I said, okay, let's do it. And it wasn't that expensive anyway, so it wasn't that much of a risk. And that book started to get starred reviews, you know, and I've kind of never forgotten that, So I really like to listen to my editors too, and when they are saying, really, really need to do this because I feel like it's important.
How many editors do you have at Chronicle?
There are seven editors
Okay.
altogether. So
And so
I mean,
they
I'm including the assistants,
Oh,
but
okay, yeah.
yeah.
But
But I think they're allowed to acquire eventually. So
and
they
then
can
from them
start.
is where you get all of these books that you're considering, or do you also have books from acquisition that you're considering? Like, is there like a filter to you, or are you reading like billions of books every year?
We read a lot. I mean, we read the there is a separate group that handles the unsolicited submissions
That
that we
makes
get.
sense. Yeah, I think that's where I was picturing it. All the unsolicited, I just couldn't find the word. Okay.
Those come through, and they come in these gigantic, we set them aside in these big bins, and then
Yeah.
they said, I think once a month a smaller group gets together over pizza and talks about, looks through every single submission. And then if the submissions are sent with self-addressed stamped envelopes, we'll give them a response. And obviously, if there's anything that really comes out of it, then we'll get in touch with the author.
Nice.
So, and that's, as you know, that's how we found Sherry Rinker,
That's right.
of Good Night fame. So
That's
that
right.
was a fairy tale. She came out of the, it's called the slush
The
pile.
slush pile, yeah.
Right. I don't like to call it the slush pile because that sounds a little derogatory, but that is what a lot of publishing houses call it. So she came out of the slush pile, and again, this was before my time, but an editor here found it and thought there was really something to it, and then we found somebody decided, my predecessor decided that Tom Lichtenheld would be the perfect match, and
Yeah.
indeed, that turned out to be the case. So,
I mean, there's always those stories, isn't there, that for all of the piles and piles of things that stack up at every publisher in the slush pile, I hear two things. I hear one that they really do get read, though. They don't just get like recycled.
they do.
They get the respect of at least being read. But that the yeah, every once in a while there is this gem in there, and that's just that's a thing that happens. I understand too the concept of, well, having an agent means not only are you the publisher, if I understand this right, like trusting this agent to, because they've come to you, you've built this relationship with them, but also it's sort of like a second layer of editing and checking and making sure, is it really like publisher ready?
I think that's definitely true. I think that there are, it also depends on the agent. I think there are some agents who are really good at working with their authors and polishing the work ahead
Okay.
of time so that when it comes, it's in really good shape. And then there are other agents who are less, they feel that that's not what they're there for. What they're there for is to really sell the book, but they have the relationships, they know all the different players, and they're able to pick out, well, I think this person would be a good match for this particular kind of writing, So there's that kind of agent as well.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense that there's all types, and that, I mean, gosh, for all I hear about everything in it, if there's nothing I've learned about publishing, then it's that there's a different path for every single person. There's no one right path. But
That's true.
yay for Sherry being in your pile.
Yeah, it was
yeah,
pretty great.
man.
That was really pretty
And then it
amazing.
spent months and months and months and months on New York Times bestseller. And it's
Yeah,
on my we read it within the past couple of weeks. We've read Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site. How can you not? That's a great book.
you have to. I mean, my son was just past the age when it hit,
Yeah.
when because he's 9 now, but I think when it came out, he was 5, so he was a little bit old for it. He still enjoyed it, but I thought, my God, where was this book when he was 3? This would have been perfect for him, because he was exactly that kid. He would sleep with his trucks, he would sleep with his Hot
Yes,
Wheels, and he would name them. They all had names. He'd have like 10 of them, and they'd fall out of his bed in the middle of the night, and I think, oh my God, if we lose one of these things, all hell's going to break loose because I'm not going to be able to find it, but and Sherry absolutely understood that and tapped into that with that book. So it was really an act of intuitive genius, I think.
Yeah, she's tapping life.
Yep.
Do you find that? I was going to say, well, it's a construction book and they just sort of never get old. But then it just struck me, though, that okay, so there's a lot of ninja books coming out, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And there's also, weirdly to me, and I love this, but it's weird, there's a lot of, like, Yeti / Bigfoot books coming out, which is fun. I just suddenly, again, like, I'm just seeing them all. Like, oh my word, there's a ton coming out. And I get that that also means that, like, 3 years ago or something, they probably were all acquired, because it takes a little bit of time for them to come out. But do you at all, is that ever in your mind, like, trying to, are there, I know we just talked about being sort of against trends and setting your own trends, but are there like interests for kids that you're ever sort of keeping in mind that way? Or do you maybe even just from the other side see manuscripts come in waves following different trends like that?
Oh, there are definitely manuscripts that come in waves.
That happens, right? Well, there's also websites that say, oh, the big thing is this, so make sure you're writing whatever about whatever. But
Yeah. I mean, you know, my feeling has always been from time immemorial, I think, because I kind of feel like, oh my God, how many times? I've been doing this forever at this point, you know? Because I what is it? It's like over 20 years now.
I've been in publishing.
Yeah. So, but my position has always been that really great books create trends.
Okay.
Don't follow trends. So, for example, Press Here. You know, I mean, it wasn't the first interactive book, for sure. Because I think maybe that honor really should go to The Monster at the End of This Book.
Right, the greatest book ever. Yeah, oh my words!
It's such a good book. It is truly one of the greatest books ever. But it did it in such a different creative way.
Right.
You know. So that created a trend, as you mentioned. You know, and I think similarly, Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site has created a construction site trend. Not that there was ever. That people weren't aware of construction vehicles and how well they sold, but Sherry did something different, and you know that's created a trend.
Or maybe even not even just a trend, yes, but it also makes me think maybe it just made it easier for some other construction books to get picked up because they see some other publishers might even see, right, like, oh, these construction books are really selling well. Maybe we'll take a chance on this one where we might not have felt like it before.
Right.
At least I'd like to think so. I have a boy who loves construction books, and between Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site and the I should look it up. What is it? There's one called Demolition and one called Construction. Brian Love something. I can't. Gosh, Sutton. The author's name. Her last name is Sutton, and then the guy, his first name is Brian. I got to look it up while we talk. But Those books too, I feel like there's some books, Sally Sutton, Brian Lovelock, I was really close, that they have Construction, Demolition, they have a bunch, where there's just certain books on a topic that stand out. There could be 100 construction books, but it doesn't matter. My boy doesn't want to read 100 construction books.
Right.
There's 2 or 5 right. that he wants right. to read.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of the magic of books, right? There is a book out there that is just right for that particular reader, you know? So we just have to figure out how to get that, you know, get that book to that reader. And you as a parent have to figure out how to find that book.
Jeannie, what's the book that was just right for you when you were a kid? Did you have one? I'm trying to think of mine while I ask you.
I did. So I don't, you know what? I had 2.
Yeah.
I will talk to you about 2. You know, The Bat Poet?
The Bat Poet.
Yeah. Randall okay. Jarrell.
I don't know it. I'm going to write down that.
I want to
look at it. I'm writing it down. The Bat Poet.
It's such a beautiful book. So, and actually now that I think about it, it is really about the writing about a poet. It's about a bat who is a poet and he finds a chipmunk and, he tells his poetry to the chipmunk, and the chipmunk, it turns out, is his perfect audience. So it's really about a writer and a reader, you know. But way, way back in the day when my mom was reading it to me when I was little, I just remember that I just loved the pictures, which are just gorgeous pen and ink cross-hatch drawings from Maurice Sendak. And then the text is just beautiful, and it was written by Randall Jarrell, who of course was a poet.
Right.
So that's a classic. And then the other great book of my childhood was Harriet the Spy.
Which I've mentioned this on recording before, but I've had this weird relationship with middle grade and with early chapter books, which is that when I learned to read, that was sort of it for my parents. They were like, okay, you can read, go read on your own. I never was transitioned into middle grade at all. So it ended up being as an adult, as an educator, that I ended up reading all of these and experiencing them as an adult, which is a great experience too. But it always makes me wonder what would the child me have felt in these books? Because I read a book like The Phantom Tollbooth, or I read a book like A Wrinkle in Time or something like that. And it feels like it's been a part of my history forever, but it hasn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is sort of the one that I did read that I remember liking when I read it. But even,
See, I didn't like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But I think for me, I was recovering from Catholic school. So I'd gone to Catholic school for 3 years before my parents moved, and I ended up going to a public school. And I saw the religious imagery in it right away. And so for me, it was just too much like religion classes.
Okay.
In Catholic school.
If I could be totally frank with you, I think I checked it out because of the cover. Uh-huh. And because to me, the cover looked like an Atari game.
Yeah.
And I think I read it. I think there was a subconscious part of me reading it because I thought, this is like a video game, even though it's not at all like a video game.
Yeah.
And I don't even think when I read it, I think I was more reading the words, not reading the story.
Right. Well, it is kind of like a video game. I mean, it is very much about good versus evil. You know,
there are moments like that, yeah.
Like good versus evil and, battles and,
The picture book for me, though, that was the one that that I think is inseparable from my childhood is Scuffy the Tugboat, the little golden book.
Oh yeah.
And it was one that has become part of my history because my mom tells me about how my dad read that book to me every morning at breakfast. And I don't recall him reading it, but yet when so I have like the copy from that they used to read to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at it, I think like, oh, these pictures are so familiar. I must have forgotten about the book in that sort of pre-memory-ish stage where you're not like, I don't remember everything from when I was five or whatever. But I look at it and there's something that has been ingrained in my subconscious that I really adore about that book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how that can happen?
Well, that's what you're doing though, Jeannie.
Yeah.
You're in that business. I just keep coming back to it. Like, yeah, but this is the woman that sits at a table with these other people and somehow magic comes out there where you will pick books that will be that book, that experience, that memory for children.
Well, that's so nice of you to say.
But it's amazing too.
It actually, I think we all feel like we have great jobs and we're really lucky to be doing this and getting paid for it, and getting to work with incredible talent and being able to find people, to look at a manuscript and say, who could be a good match for that? Or who could we have found online or through an artist rep that we know who has discovered somebody, maybe that's the right person, There's constantly magic around the corner every time you work on something, and that's really great. I think that's what we all are looking for too.
That's
what we live for, right? There's magic around every corner. There's a possibility for that and connection.
I need to end on that. That is such a beautiful sentiment to leave on your mind. Magic around every corner. Jeannie, I'm so thankful you came on. Do you mind if I ask you my kickball question that I ask all the guys? I would love to ask you just because you're around everything. Anyway, I'm assembling an all-star kidlit dream team kickball tournament, and I would love to know, Jeannie, so what person alive or past from the kidlit world you would want on your team and why?
So this is a really tough question. Am I allowed to pick two people?
I'll allow it.
Okay. Will you allow two people? All right. So because I've been thinking about this. So I would love to have Ursula Nordstrom on my team. Do you know who Ursula Nordstrom is?
Remind me. The name
so
sounds
familiar. Ursula Nordstrom was the legendary editor at Harper. This was Harper and Row. And she was the person who brought in Goodnight Moon. She published Where the Wild Things Are.
I've read articles. Okay.
Yeah. And there is a book called Dear Genius, which is her letters to the different artists that she was working with. That is really worth reading. So, and she published Shel Silverstein. I mean, the list goes on and on of the incredible people that she brought to children's books, and her belief in children's literature and her belief in it as a real art form. You know, that's really inspiring. So I would want her on the team, not because I think she's a great athlete, but because I think she would be great to just talk to on the bench, you know, while we were waiting. Like, I could ask her all these questions. Like, come on, what was so-and-so really like, you know?
It'd be you missing your train stop all over again. You'd be missing Jeannie, you're up. Jeannie, come on, you're up.
Exactly. And then the other person that I would pick is E.L. Konigsberg.
Oh, yes.
Who I was lucky enough to work on her last two books with when I was at Simon Schuster. And I will say that I would pick her for several reasons. First of all, she was so smart. She was so funny. She was incredibly competitive. You know, so I don't know how athletic she was, but I know that she would not want to lose ever. So she would be fierce on the football field. I am convinced of that.
Wow, these sound like two fantastic choices. I'm glad we took both. That's wonderful. Jeannie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time and for coming on. And really, thank you on behalf of all of us readers and all of us parents of readers for your hard work to get really good stuff in the hands of all of us.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for this great show. It's really wonderful. And it's great to hear other people's points of view. And it's fantastic to know that we have such a strong proponent of children's books out there.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. And by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.